Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McKellen. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Today we have Dr. Derek Van Reenen here on the show. He's from UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Education. He's the assistant adjunct professor and director of that school. And we're going to talk to him all about the very special visually impaired sport of goalball. We're going to talk to him about how goalball is similar to soccer, but how it's designed for the visually impaired, and how he brought a very special goalball course, how he, in fact, created it at UC Berkeley. Welcome to the show, Dr. Van Reenen.
Thank you very much for having me, Brian.
So, we want to get to know you first. How did you decide to work at UC Berkeley and head the Graduate School of Education?
I came to UC Berkeley as actually an undergraduate, and I was a student athlete here. And then I went on and played a little bit. I'm a soccer player professionally. And then I came back to do my graduate work. I got my PhD, and then I got hired on in the faculty. So I really am. I bleed blue and gold. Berkeley cannot seem to get rid of me.
I'm sure Berkeley can't get rid of you because you created this special goalball course for them. How did you decide to create that course?
Well, I've been, as I say, a faculty member for a number of years, and there was a Haas scholar undergraduate whose interest was in disability studies, and he and I began to communicate, and I encouraged him to actually apply to my graduate program. In those conversations, we realized that universities across this country have done a very poor job of providing opportunities for health and wellness, but also even recreational and competitive sports. And so we decided that goalball was going to be our first launch, and we're going to use that as basically a way to try to provide opportunities, in this case, to the visually impaired students and community members in the area.
Hey, if Berkeley can offer a big basketball team and it can attract some new special recruits, why not also do the same with goalball?
That's exactly right. And I think one of the problems with kind of the model of sports in our culture is that it tends towards elitism. So lots of, even at the youth level, young people are selected out of participating. And there's this sort of, you know, way in which we try to move people towards more competitive teams, towards the professional ranks. But we leave out a tremendous amount of individuals who really deserve to and want to participate in a whole variety of activities.
That's true. And so you created this goalball course in partnership with the Bay Area Outreach and Recreational Program, that's BORP. I interviewed a former guest, Nancy Yates, on this show about the yoga class she does at BORP. And also this goalball program is a partnership through UC Berkeley's Recreational Sports Department and also through the American Studies Scholar Program. Is that right?
That is correct. And in fact, how I partnered with BORP for this class, for the goalball class, it was a part of what we call Engaged Scholarship. And it's a campus-wide effort to try not to be so elitist at a place like Berkeley, where faculty here have all the knowledge and that somehow we are disseminating that knowledge outwards, but rather to recognize that there's lots of expertise in the communities and that we and the students can learn tremendously from that expertise. So BORP is a great example of an organization that's been around over 25 years, and they really have been a driving force in this course. Without BORP, this course never could have happened.
I know it's a little early to talk about this in the interview, but how can our listeners sign up for the goalball course, and what are some of the expectations of the class?
No, great question. You don't have to be a student at UC Berkeley to sign up for the course. We have about half of the participants are UC Berkeley students, and half are from the community at large. It's a commitment of time, of course, and currently we're meeting on Friday afternoons to participate. Because the course has been so successful, we now have different levels. So there's a beginning class, and then we're all already moving up towards a competitive goalball class that actually is going to represent the university, has already represented the university in regional and national competition.
Yes, and the weekends are the best time to play sports.
That's right.
And so we got to talk about goalball, the sport itself, goalball. I understand it got a unique start, according to the United States Association of Blind Athletes, that's USABA for short, and I understand that goalball got its start to help the World War II military vets become physically active. How did goalball achieve this purpose?
That's exactly right, Brian. In Western Europe, it was one of the first, if not the first sport that was specifically designed for individuals with visual impairment. Many sports, as you know, have been adapted to serve the disabled community. But this sport was actually designed particularly for this population. And there were a lot of veterans coming back from the war after World War II that had been blinded or partially impaired in terms of vision. And this is how the sport ultimately developed. And then over time, as it got more and more purchase around the world, it became actually a Paralympic sport in 1976 and has been since.
Who are some of the best goalball athletes and how have they contributed to the sport?
You know, there are very strong teams in Europe. The United States and Canada also field very strong teams, but it is a sport that has become quite international. But I would say that because it was developed in Western Europe, that has been the strongest area of goalball play historically. But that's shifting. That's shifting as more and more individuals and more cultures avail opportunity for visually impaired athletes.
So goalball is a very exciting, a very strategic, a very challenging, fast-paced game. Why is this the case?
Well, you know, it's one of the most interesting things that have happened as a result of this course at Berkeley is that not only have visually impaired students and community members participated in this sport and this class, many sighted individuals have participated. And what ends up happening is for those sighted students, everyone is basically put onto a level playing field. So regardless of whether you have a visual impairment or not, every participant must wear eye shades or goggles, which takes complete vision from you. So everybody participating is at the same level. One of the great learning outcomes of this for those sighted students has been to put themselves in the position of their colleagues who are on the court who are visually impaired, and they learn tremendously from this experience about what they have taken for granted their whole life.
Speaking of which, I remember playing darts at the American Council of the Blind Convention in Reno, and they made all of us wear blindfolds too. And I'm visually impaired. And I've always been wondering for years, especially with the goalball that you play here at UC Berkeley, why everybody has to wear blindfolds and these special goggles.
So it does, in fact, as you know, Brian, it does make it, again, a level playing field. And as you know, most individuals who have visual impairment have some vision. And so in this case, everybody is basically without any vision whatsoever. And you can imagine being on a court and throwing this ball, which weighs 3 pounds. It is perforated. It has bells in it. And the top level players can throw this ball at 40 miles per hour. And so you as a defender trying to stop this ball have to throw your body, not seeing it, but only hearing that this trajectory is coming at you, basically has to block it. So as you might imagine, we've had a lot of bloody noses and a lot of people who have gotten hit with this ball, and it's a very competitive sport.
Lots of injuries, I'll bet. What are some of the go ball rules?
So if you imagine a volleyball court or a basketball court, the way in which a goal ball court is designed is that you have essentially two end lines at the end of these courts, and with rope or string, there is tape that is put over it to actually put in the boundaries of where each team will line up. And you have three players on either team, and imagine it as a triangle. There's the top players at the point, and then two players behind that top player. They stretch across the length of the end line on one end of the court, and the other team does the same. And then the goal is to throw the ball across the court and to go over the end line without one of the opponents being able to stop the ball. That is a goal. At the Paralympic Games, or the more competitive, there actually are nets as well. So, but if you're doing it more in a recreational way, you can line up the court with the tape and the rope, and not have nets, and still you can play the sport. But it's very competitive, and it's very strategic, and it's very fun to watch.
So, what's the main object of go ball, and how do you win one game?
So, the main object, of course, is to score more goals than your opponent. And in this instance, it's all about that competition. I'd have to say, though, from my vantage point, there are lots of other goals to this course and to this sport, mainly inclusion. I teach the course while also providing curriculum about disability studies and understanding not just visual impairment, but issues of access and participation rights for individuals with disabilities. So for me, it's a learning opportunity that in this case is physical and somatic, that actually also adds to what they're learning in the classroom.
What's some of the other equipment that you need to play go ball?
Well, one of the nice things about go ball, and why it has become for us the beginning sport that we are utilizing, is it's not all that expensive to start a goal ball program. You can probably set everything up for $500 or less. Now, if you play wheelchair basketball or soccer, the chair alone can cost thousands of dollars. But goal ball, it only essentially requires the string and the tape. Again, as I say, you don't have to buy the nets to create a goal ball program. And then you really want knee pads and shoulder pads, and then the eye shades. And that's basically it. Oh, of course, you need the ball. And the goal balls are very specialized. There are, frankly, are only a couple of companies in the world that make these goal balls. But again, all of that can be done fairly inexpensively, so there's no good reason why recreational programs and universities and schools can't actually start their own programs.
How long does it take to play a game of go ball? Are there like quarters or periods?
Yes, there are two halves, and the game is played within that time frame. If I would recommend that people who are interested can go, online. They can watch Paralympic play, which is very, very competitive, and to ultimately see just how exciting this sport can be. Interestingly enough, the way we're playing it currently is co-ed, but at the Paralympic game, there's a women's teams and there are men's teams. But again, in terms of trying to create this inclusion, our team is actually co-ed, and we compete against other co-ed teams as well.
How do our listeners get into goalball teams or championships if they want to compete in this sport?
Well, so BORP is a great example of a community organization that has been teaching and providing opportunities for goalball for years. So, you know, local communities and organizations are great ways. I'm hopeful that this example that we're doing at Berkeley will catch on with other institutions at the collegiate, high school levels, and so that schools will become areas in which that will foster opportunities for students of all disability and ability to participate. And so I think just the more that we can offer these opportunities in different school settings and community settings, the better.
Are there any goalball teams out there in California and the nation or the world that our listeners could learn about, know about, and sign up for?
More and more schools are starting to look into this. It's you know, the Office of Civil Rights, as you probably know, back in 1972 with the passage of Title IX, became very involved in interpreting and adjudicating issues of gender equity and ways in which the interests and abilities of, in this case, the underrepresented sex could ultimately be offered. The same issue, I would say, is one of the civil rights issues of the 21st century, has to do with individuals with disabilities and providing similar opportunities based upon interests and abilities of this diverse community. So I think that it really is our job as a community to try to push to make certain that, and I'm most interested in educational institutions because I'm a faculty member, but that educational institutions at all levels, at the primary, secondary, and post-secondary level, are conscious of providing these sorts of opportunities.
Have you guys gone to any special conferences and played for attendees or offered any special clinics? Have you even gone to any special tournaments? Any of those?
Yeah, great question. Our goalball team at Berkeley now, which has been, by the way, supported by our chancellor, they went to Portland to play in a tournament about a month ago. And then also last weekend, they were at a tournament in Sacramento. So there are opportunities for competition and to become involved in goalball programs that are both recreational as well as highly competitive. Interestingly enough, Brian, the NCAA, which organizes all college sports at a very high level and has been, you know, under a lot of scrutiny with various lawsuits and all that, they are right now quite interested in the kind of work we're doing at Berkeley and that other universities are doing to try to, again, in some ways change the definition of what competitive sport looks like in this country. And these are examples of ways that we can do that.
Maybe goalball will become an NCAA sport. Maybe there will be a Final Four for goalball. You'll even get on CBS. Who knows?
I would love that. That's part of what my my research and writing is striving to do.
That's great. So what sort of advice do you have for our listeners out there who want to play goalball?
You can always make contact with me at Berkeley, and I know certainly who are, you know, where there are opportunities both in California and elsewhere. So we can help provide listeners with that. I also would look at your communities wherever you are and see if there are these opportunities, and just you know, push yourself to try to participate. It's very scary. It's very scary the first time you end up playing the sport, but it is actually incredibly exciting once you have that opportunity. The camaraderie is amazing. People really come to support one another. And if you like the competition, it can become a really competitive sport for you as well.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Only I'm really glad that you've reached out to me, Brian, and I really look forward to continuing to communicate with you. And I want to avail to anyone who's listening, if they want to make contact to me, I'm happy to talk with them and or communicate over email.
Now back to the Go Ball class for a second. Is for the non-UC Berkeley students, they can sign up through, I assume, a sort of College of Extended Learning, right?
Some of the students are actually attending a local community college, and we're working to try to give them credit through their institutions. You don't have to sign up for academic credit if you don't want to. If you just want to participate and you're not enrolled anywhere, that's okay. Although through this experience, there have been a number of community members who have become excited to actually apply to study both at the community college level as well as at the four-year level here at Berkeley. So I also see it as providing access not just to Go Ball, but to talk through access to educational opportunities much more broadly.
Dr. Van Rienen, we hope that our listeners have enjoyed hearing this interview and someday try Go Ball. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Before we go, listeners, I welcome comments and suggestions on this show. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind, or even Speak Out for the Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening. And remember to speak out. Join me, Brian McKellen, on Speaking Out for the Blind. I interview famous and inspirational blind individuals and other specialists about a wide variety of topics, providing you with the steps to achieve your dreams. Speaking Out for the Blind airs Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and repeats every 2 hours overnight and throughout the next day, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream.
Do you have a hobby that you would like to discuss? A topic that you are very knowledgeable about and would like to present about to a very large audience? If so, are you interested in becoming a presenter on ACB Radio Mainstream? If the answer to any or all of the previous questions is yes, then we would be delighted to have you join us on ACB Radio Mainstream. On ACB Radio Mainstream, your program must be a talk show, though it can discuss any topic relating to blindness, visual impairment, or the American Council of the Blind. Your program can be pre-recorded or live. To get started, email support@acbradio.org and let us know what type of program you would like to present, what the topic is, how often you will produce a new program, how long your program will be, and if it will be pre-recorded or live. We will work with you to get you on ACB Radio Mainstream as soon as possible. We look forward to having you join us on the ACB Radio Mainstream team.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are, the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.